Genesis says that in the beginning, the earth was a formless void, and darkness enveloped everything. And God orchestrated order out of chaos. God said, let there be light. God said, let there be life. Leonard Bernstein once said that God never said those words. He actually sang them. He said he sang them to Beethoven's Fifth. Now, we had you recognize that tune last week. Da, 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 da. Okay, we're going to do this together. Let there be life. Are you ready? Let there be life. Let there be life. And behold, there was life. You know, when I was a kid, I would go around in the summertime and lift up rocks to see what was underneath in that cool, moist soil. And usually there were worms and slugs and sow bugs. And what do you call sow bugs? Roly polies. That's what you found under there. In the summer, my cousins and I would take off our shoes and socks and roll our pant legs up, and we would wade in the riffles of the Little Sandusky River. There we would turn over rocks. The guys underneath had a net so we could catch the crawfish that flipped out that we would later impale and use to catch fish. You know, when I was young, outdoors enchanted me, as it still does today. Because earth teems with light. When God said, let there be light and life, from that time on, the world was full of it. Earth teems with life. Whether in the rainforest, where scientists seem that every year are discovering new species of plants and birds and insects that they had never seen before. And just as you can put a little drop of pond water under a microscope, and you can see all kinds of swimming and squirming single-celled creatures that speak of life. Life exists where it shouldn't exist, in some incredibly hot, cold, and caustic environments. Life is found beneath the polar ice caps. Life is found in the crushing depths of the ocean, where on the ocean floor, these toxic, incredibly hot plumes of volcanic gas are bubbling, and yet life flourishes all around them. You know, I have always been fascinated with the thought that there may be intelligent life in some part of the universe, either in the form of some strange bacteria, or maybe there are humanoids who have capacities that are far, far greater than our own. I remember an interview that David Frost did with Billy Graham, in which Billy Graham said he believed that in some remote corner of the universe, God had created other races. Maybe like us and maybe not, but created other races that know him and that do his will and build his kingdom in those places as well. You know, until recently, astronomers had not seen any planets outside of our own solar system, but that all changed with the Hubble telescope, and now with the Kepler space telescope, they are peering further and further into the universe, going back to the very beginning of time. And what they are discovering is that the universe is full of planets. Before, up until January of last year, 4,669 planets had been found. Since January of last year, they have identified another 521. And what they are interested in is if there are planets that inhabit what they call the Goldilocks zone, where they're neither so close to the nearest star that it's incinerated or too far away so that it's frozen solid. They're looking for that orbit that is just right. And not that long ago, they found a candidate, 5 times the size of the Earth and a mere 500 light years away. Now, think about the fact that light travels 5.88 trillion miles in 1 year. Multiply 500 times 5.88 trillion, and it means we're not going to be getting there very soon. Our imaginations are stoked by the implications of such incredible discoveries. But on Easter Sunday, our search for the signs of life are more local, more down to earth, more immediate. Because the greatest event in human history took place in the pre-dawn hours of a Sunday morning, and no one saw it coming. All expectations had been abandoned on Friday. All bets for the future were off. Jesus had taken his disciples on this incredible journey of spiritual growth and learning about God, of witnessing miracles and transformations and conversions and healings. But the light that shined in the darkness had been swallowed up. The one who would be king, the one who said, "I am the resurrection and the life," was now a cold corpse sealed in a tomb. As I said in the first service, there are pronounced differences between the Gospels as to what happened and what sequence they were in on that incredible Sunday. Because there are different characters and, again, different sequences. Yet all of those stories agree on one thing. No one expected any signs of life. No one. In the dark before dawn, the two Marys and Joanna went to the tomb because they hadn't been able to do what needed to be done on the Sabbath. And so they had come with their spices. Do you know what the spices were for? It was an embalming of Jesus' body. They would place the spices on the body to hasten the decomposition. And 1 year later, they would come back and they would carefully pick up the bones of Jesus and place them in a box called an ossuary. And then that box would be set with others in that tomb, and now there's space for the next corpse to be brought in. That's what they were expecting. There was no hope on that first Easter. Despite everything Jesus had told them to the contrary, no one expected to find life in that tomb. Jesus had brought Lazarus back to life, but now there was no one to bring him back to life. And so forlorn, the disciples and all of those followers head back to the darkness and death that characterized the world before Jesus came into their lives. Now we know all about darkness, don't we? You can't see in the dark. In the dark, you don't know where you're going. When you're in the dark, it's easy to get lost and frightened. Darkness is all about us today because darkness is what terrorism is about. Darkness is what our politicians' behavior is all about. Darkness is what war is all about. Darkness is what hunger and poverty and racism and injustice is about. Darkness is what the newspapers and literature and music is about. Darkness is what our moods are about. Darkness is the end for which we are headed, some people say. Now, you can't see them, but There are two other preachers with me today. There is Preacher Life on this side and Preacher Death. You need to know that Preacher Death never misses a funeral. He never passes up a chance to talk. He is persuasive because he only has one sermon that he preaches thousands of times a day. The sermon goes like this. Damn all of you. Damn all of you. I win every time. I destroy all loving relationships. I shatter all community. I dash all hope. And I have claimed another victim. Look at the corpse. Look at the open grave. There is your evidence. I always win. But he... So what will it be? Preacher Life or Preacher Death? Light or dark? Will we be extremist for hate or will we be extremist for love? You know, Preacher Death always wants us looking down that 6-foot hole to the open grave, ready to receive another victim. But Preacher Life asks us to look and peer inside an open grave and the emptiness therein. He always has an Easter sermon filled with signs of life to embolden sad and sorrowful people. He can't resist mocking his adversary. Oh, Preacher Death, where's your victory now? Oh, Preacher Death, what happened to your stinger? I had the privilege 3 years ago to hear the great preacher's preacher, Fred Craddock, in Nashville, Tennessee. He told about the day that he was preaching in his church when somebody at the back of the sanctuary had a heart attack. The MS squad was called, and as they were approaching and he was still preaching, he could hear the sounds of the sirens. But as soon as it, even though it took them just a little time to get there, it was taking them forever to get to the victim. And they couldn't understand what was happening. And so as soon as Craddock finished his sermon, he went back and said something to the paramedics. He said, "Why did it take you so long to tend to this man?" And the paramedic said, "It took us 20 minutes to find someone with a pulse." Ouch. Had to check through a lot of corpses before they found the man with the pulse. You know, today we're on the lookout for life all around us, but we also on this day have to take a courageous look inside to see if there is a shred of Easter life within us. You know, had we been present at that first Easter, we would probably hear ourselves saying things like the disciples would say. Maybe we would say, "Oh, well, let's go out to the tomb one last time and show our respects for poor dead Jesus. Let's go to the cemetery and give dead Jesus a proper burial. We had trouble following him when he was alive, but now he's dead and it's the least we can do." Well, Willimon says it's a bit easier to be a disciple of Jesus when he's dead. When he's dead, you can count on him staying in one place. You don't have to catch your breath trying to keep up with him as he's going to that blind person over there, that crippled man over there, that broken woman over here, this injustice, who knows where. It's a lot easier if he is just in one place. I don't want to belabor this point, just to tell you that over these past months, I'm getting better at seeing signs of life where perhaps on the surface there doesn't seem to be much of it. It's very easy to be with Robin, and to be with Gladys, and to be with Ariel, and understand that there is a limit to their lives. There's a limit to all of our lives, but for them, it is especially poignant. And I can tell you there is more life in them than preacher death could ever handle. They are clay vessels that are temporarily enshrined with wonderful spirits, bodies that are losing their usefulness, but the three people within are very much alive. And by a miracle that no one expected and no one saw long ago, they too will be raised by the miracle that God has promised us through Jesus. You know, our impaired earthbound selves will someday, by some mysterious means that God only knows, will have a resurrected body. That dark glass that Paul says keeps us from really seeing one another will be removed, and we will see each other, and we will see God face to face as we are. And the fears that hounded us and the wounds that bound us will by Jesus' wounds be healed. And our failures and our achievements we thought that mattered so much while we are alive will matter no more. And our painful goodbyes will mean what goodbye once meant a long time ago. Did you know that goodbye is derived from God-bye? It used to be that saying goodbye was something so difficult that we needed God to be with us both in our parting and in the time we are away. And so by God by, we ask God to protect us until we meet again. And farewell will one day be hello. When I lived in Elkhart, we had a doctor in the congregation, Dr. Pletcher, who was an oncologist, and now and then he would refer me to one of his patients. He wanted me to go see a guy named Lee. Lee was in the final stages of liver cancer. He didn't have a church outside of weddings and funerals. He couldn't remember when he had ever been in a church. He didn't know anything about the rudiments of Christianity, but despite all that, he said he would be open to talking with a pastor. Lee worked all his life for the railroad. He worked hard. He lived hard. He drank hard. And his alcoholism had led to so many issues. He had so many deep questions, and he had so many regrets about the life of pain that he had caused his family. And so for a period of weeks, we met for what we called Christianity 101, just what is this thing we call faith, and who is Jesus, and what does it mean to be a disciple? And the more we met, the less anxious he seemed to be, and the more confident he became. He made amends with his wife and son. He went to church 4 Sundays in a row, and that was it. He couldn't go anymore, but he came, and on that 4th Sunday, Lee was baptized. 1 week later, on his deathbed, I got the call that Lee wants to see you, and it's very important. And when I got there, he had this terrified expression on his face. I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I had a nightmare. And I'm afraid this nightmare is a shadow of what's going to become of me." And I said, "Tell me about it." He said, "I was in this dark place, and the walls were very close, but as I walked down this path, they started expanding, and I could see that I was on this sidewalk, and there were these steep, rugged walls of a canyon that were reaching up so high, and I kept walking, because that sidewalk went off onto the horizon, and as I was doing that, I was looking around, and there were green fields over here and over here, and the further I walked, I heard people yelling my name. And they were screaming profanities at me. And they were calling me a hypocrite. And they told me about the just rewards that I was going to face. They kept taunting me and taunting me up there. They were lined up on both sides. And there was this high chain link fence that was behind them, rolled barbed wire at the top. And they kept on and they kept on. And I closed my ears because I didn't want to hear it. And finally, that road led me up to this table, and it was filled with all kinds of food, and it had this cup, and I'm scared to death of what this means. I said, "Lee, has it occurred to you that maybe this wasn't a nightmare? Did it occur to you that maybe you dreamed the 23rd Psalm?" "What's that?" he asked. And so I read it. "He leadeth me into this dark, desolate valley. He leads him by green fields. He prepares a table in the presence of all of those enemies that lined both sides of the canyon. There's the cup that overflows." I said, "Lee, you had a dream that's the greatest sign of life there is. And I think can think of no better way for us to conclude this here message than by saying it together. That's okay if you forget little pieces. I may forget in the course of doing this. But remembering the signs of life that Jesus has given us everywhere and with everyone, let us say, 'The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me by the still waters. He restores my soul. He makes me to walk in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table for me in the presence of my enemies, and my cup overflows. And surely the goodness and mercy of the Lord shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever and forever and forever. Surrounded by God's myriad signs of life. Amen.